broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to RN Huddle. This is your host, Heidi Keeler, coming to you from Omaha, Nebraska. And today, we have a very special guest. We are going to talk about heart failure and all things cardiac. And joining us today is Chrissy Dunbar, and she is one of our own UNMC wonderful providers. And so we're going to have a nice, robust discussion about cardiac issues, heart failure, and all things nursing interventions. So Chrissy, welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. And Chrissy, why don't you let our listeners in and tell us a little bit about you? What was your path? What are you do now? And what makes you want to talk about cardiac issues today?
Sure. So I am one of the advanced heart failure cardiology physicians at UNMC, and I've been here for a little over 2 years now, going on about 2.5 years. Cardiology has always been, I guess you could say, my passion. I know that's a weird way, kind of a cheesy way to put it, but it really truly has. I can remember back when I was in medical school, I always knew from the very beginning I wanted to do something in cardiology. I always joke with people and tell them I picked cardiology because it was the one part of the body I could actually wrap my head around and make sense of. I find the heart itself fascinating, and it's the heart itself and the pathophysiology of it that it makes me get up and want to go to work every day. And heart failure itself is the one aspect of cardiology that has really piqued my attention. One of the reasons is because it's such a huge issue now. We've gotten so good at treating heart attacks and treating hyperlipidemia and hypertension. People are living longer, but as a result of living longer, they're developing heart failure. So we have to learn how to treat it better. So that's why I do what I do.
Well, it is amazing to hear about your passion and knowing that you truly love what you do. For our listeners, Dr. Dunbar really wanted to come on the podcast with us to really help us as nurses know how to intervene, know how to assess, and know how to recognize our nursing interventions that, of course, can result in better patient outcomes. So I think what we really need to do, first of all, Chrissy, is let you know that our listeners are very appreciative that a physician would come on our show and help us out with this. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. I think anyone that wants to learn about anything, we should be more than willing to speak with them. We all need to try to expand our knowledge every day. And if I can help in that, then great.
Right. And we really try here at RN Huddle to really stress the interprofessionalism of healthcare. And we really rely on the expertise of our physicians and our providers. And at the same time, we recognize that we play a role in making sure that you have what you need in order to best care for
Absolutely.
Our patients.
Yes.
So let's dive right in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about heart failure and maybe start with some simple etiology and then what that looks like for the patient who is experiencing it.
I think probably what I would start off with is what I would tell a patient when I see them for the first time in my clinic is that when we talk about heart failure, we typically like to break it down into two specific types. So we have about 50% of individuals that develop the type of heart failure that most of us are more familiar with. So something has affected the heart muscle itself, damaged it, made it very weak so that the heart doesn't squeeze as strongly as what it typically should, so that the heart function will drop. That's what most people are familiar with. But we also have about 50% of our patient that we see in our clinic have the type of heart failure known as diastolic heart failure, where the squeezing ability of the heart may be totally fine. So there's a term that you will often hear us use called an ejection fraction. And what that is, it's a number or a percentage that we give that tells us how well the heart squeezes, how strong it is. So in diastolic heart failure, these individuals may have a quote unquote normal ejection fraction. However, their overall cardiac output or the amount of blood that the heart is able to squeeze out is too low. And the reason for that is because the heart itself has become stiff. And when the heart becomes stiff, it starts to become the heart muscle itself becomes thick. And if the heart muscle becomes thick, that means the heart cavity becomes small because the heart only has so much room to grow. And if the heart cavity becomes small, that means it can hold less blood or less fluid. So it can squeeze all it wants to, but if it holds less blood, the overall amount of blood that it's going to squeeze out into the rest of the body is going to be low. So we break it down into a systolic or a diastolic heart failure. Now, the signs and symptoms of both types of heart failure tend to be very similar. They both cause shortness of breath. They both cause swelling. That swelling can be in the abdomen or it can be in the legs and feet. Now, a lot of people sometimes will be mistaken and say, oh, this individual is not having a heart failure episode because their feet or legs are not swollen. That's not necessarily so. Your body can hold fluid anywhere in the body that it wants to. And the abdomen or the abdominal cavity is a great place to hold fluid. So if the belly is distended in someone that has a history of either type of heart failure, that could be a sign and symptom of a heart failure flare up. So we always start off by differentiating between systolic and diastolic heart failure. And that helps us guide how we treat them. The medical therapy, the treatment is going to be slightly different, but the signs and symptoms overall are going to be the same.
Right. We know that there have been changes in the classifications of heart failures over time. And depending on when we go through nursing school or when we go to professional development events, we may not have the most recent knowledge about guidelines and things like that. When it comes to the classifications of heart failure, how have those changed recently? And then what does that mean for observation in patients?
Yeah, so the most recent guidelines have pretty much broken up heart failure into technically four different categories. So we have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, or you'll hear a lot as refer to it as HFrEF. So that's individuals whose their ejection fraction or the squeeze function is less than 40%. Then you will have those individuals whose heart function, the squeeze part of it, falls within a normal range, so above 50%, but they have that stiff heart that I was talking about. And they have what we call heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, or you'll hear us refer to that as HFpEF. Then you'll have those individuals that fall in the middle, so between 41 and 49%. And those have been classified as heart failure with mid-range ejection fraction. And then the last category are individuals that have at one point had a low EF or had that HFrEF, so their EF had at one point been less than 40%, but had improved. So had improved to greater than 50%. And they used to call that heart failure with recovery. So we no longer use the term recovery because we know they haven't actually fully recovered. The heart muscle never completely goes back to normal. So the term that they're now telling us to use is heart failure with improvement. So that's the four different categories now.
Interesting. Now, from the patient experience, they're not really concerned with classifying their CHF. What they're more interested in is what are my symptoms from this and what are my restrictions? So, what do you typically tell your patients when they're in this situation?
Yeah, so what we typically will find is the vast majority of patients will get very, very fixated on the ejection fraction. And one of the things that I will caution them on is your ejection fraction is only one aspect of your heart failure. It's an important number and it's something that we will follow. We want to try to get it as high as we possibly can. But again, it's one part of your heart failure puzzle that we're looking at. I always tell them that I have individuals who have an ejection fraction that's 10%, so very low, but live a fairly normal life. And then I have individuals who have an ejection fraction that's 60%, so technically it's normal, but have a miserable life because they can't breathe and can't function. So what we are more concerned about, even more so than an ejection fraction, is what the pressures in their heart are. If we can keep the pressures within the heart low and where they should be, they'll feel good, even if their ejection fraction is low. So I always try to stress to them that's what we're going to focus on. However, again, that ejection fraction is understandably so. We want to get it as high as we possibly can to make them feel better by getting the pressures low. So if their shortness of breath has improved, their swelling has improved, their vital signs have improved, that in turn tells me that the pressures within their heart have improved. So the numbers look better, they feel better, all's better in the world.
And so, as nurses, when we get a patient with a history of heart failure, we can either get them because of an exacerbation of heart failure, which, of course, in that case, we'd be looking very closely at symptoms. Or, as we know, patients are not simple. They're often very complex and they'll come in with other issues, or maybe they're in a residential area and having multiple comorbid conditions. What would you say to those that are living with or providing care for patients with heart failure? What are we looking for as far as stability and instability?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So whenever I have someone in my clinic, especially it's a newly diagnosed heart failure, whether it's HFpEF or HFrEF, I always like to have the caretaker in the room with them when I'm speaking with them because they are a vital part of the team. And that includes nursing if the patient is going to a facility of some sort. The things that they should be looking for is any change from their norm. And by that, I know that's a very broad statement to make, but by that, what I'm meaning is if you see a change in their heart rate, so if they suddenly become bradycardic or tachycardic, or if you notice that their heart rate becomes irregular. We all know AFib is a common cause of heart failure or a heart failure exacerbation. If you notice there's a change in their blood pressure. Something that we commonly see is hypertension is a common cause of heart failure. And if we can keep their blood pressure under good control, we keep their heart failure under good control. So if you see the blood pressure starting to climb, you know that's something that needs to be addressed. If you notice changes in things like their weight, so individuals that have heart failure are going to retain fluid very, very easily. So we will usually have education sessions with them, talking to them about fluid and sodium restrictions to try to prevent fluid buildup. And we always advise their caretakers and the patient as well to weigh themselves every day. And if they notice a consistent increase in their weight, usually the cutoff we give is no more than 3 to 5 pound increase over a 1 to 2 day period. If they notice that, that's abnormal and they need to alert someone to that. And usually we can tweak whether it's a diuretic or we look and say, hey, did their blood pressure go up? Did their heart rhythm change? Things like this. Or did their solid fluid intake change? Some of the other things that we also will notice when I see a patient in clinic, I always ask them, how is their appetite? Individuals that are starting to retain fluid and starting to swell will start to lose their appetite. A lot of times it gets passed off as a GI bug, and it could be a GI bug, but if they have a history of heart failure and a patient starts to lose their appetite, let that always be in the back of your mind that they're starting to retain fluid and that's why they're not eating. We always talk to them about their sleep habits. Individuals that are starting to hold on to fluid will start to build up fluid in their lungs. While they're sitting up, they may feel totally fine, but that's because when you're sitting up, gravity is pushing fluid to the bottom part of your lung fields. When you go to lie flat, all of a sudden that fluid is going to layer out through the entire lung field. You'll have difficulty breathing. So if you start to experience that, that should be a red flag and a warning that somebody needs to be notified. Now, initially, what we may try to do is, again, if you notice any changes that can be corrected, such as blood pressure or heart rhythm or changes in diet or fluid intake, we'll try that initially, maybe by increasing their diuretic dose. But if you see no change in that, then that should be a trigger to say, okay, we need to probably get this patient into the ER or to their doctor's office to have them evaluated a little bit closer. Because what we see is when the patient eventually gets to the point that they've held on to too much fluid, I can give you all of the oral diuretics in the world, but they don't work because your body isn't able to absorb them. And then the only way to get the fluid off is to give it to you through an IV.
That's a really good review. And some of those are items that we attribute to CHF quite readily: shortness of breath, rattling in the lungs, but the loss of appetite, the restless sleeping, those are things that may get overlooked. So thank you for that review. It does seem like some of the changes in heart failure can be pretty gradual and maybe not as emergent. And then it seems like these changes might actually happen quickly and might be more emergent. So, what do you think the top emergent symptoms would be in order to know that somebody needs to come in and get evaluated more emergently?
So I would say probably the top one would be shortness of breath. So if someone is starting to become short of breath at rest, that should be a big red flag that you need to get him sent in to be evaluated right away. Other warning signs that I would be concerned about that the patient needs to be evaluated, whether it's in their doctor's office or in the emergency room, would be in persistent vomiting. If they have a drop in their blood pressure, if when you're doing daily evaluations with the patient and you notice that they have a drop in their blood pressure and they have colder extremities, hands and feet are colder than what they typically are, and you check their blood pressure and you notice their blood pressure is lower than what it normally is. That's a concern to me because that would be a big red flag that they're not perfusing well. And that's something that you do not want to ignore. You do not want to delay. Don't call their PCP. Just get them to the ER right away because that's the body's way of saying, hey, there's impending cardiogenic shock happening on you right now. Get me checked out right now. Those are probably the big ones, but usually it's uncommon for these things to happen immediately. There's usually warning signs that will happen that we had just discussed. Things that can happen very suddenly for you to see things like this happen is if someone was to have a heart attack. So if they were having an acute MI, you may see things like this. If they were having a stroke, things like that could cause something like cardiogenic shock to happen very, very quickly. But other than that, it's usually there's warning signs building up to that.
Right. So we need to be astute assessors and make sure that we're analyzing for those and making sure that we're relaying that appropriately without delay. On the cardiogenic shock, you mentioned rapid drop in blood pressure. Maybe the extremities are cold. You mentioned clammy. Are there any other symptoms that we need to make sure that we highlight and reiterate?
Yeah, so kind of classic textbook, which everyone's going to be different, but classic textbook cardiogenic shock is these individuals tend to have lower blood pressure, cold extremities. Oftentimes they're tachycardic because the body's trying to compensate for the low cardiac output. They may or may not have changes in their mental status. Something that we commonly hear from people that have very advanced heart failure is they'll say, "I just don't think as clearly as what I used to." That's a common complaint that we hear. So if you notice that is worsening in someone that's having changes in their vital signs that has known heart failure, let that be in the back of your mind. Also, these individuals will absolutely have reduced appetite. They just will not feel like eating. If you're at a facility that's able to get blood work, you'll start to see end organ dysfunction. You'll see their creatinine rising because they're having reduced perfusion to their kidneys. You'll see their liver functioning tests start to become abnormal because of reduced blood flow to the liver. All warning signs of coming doom.
Thank you. That was a really nice review. Chrissy, what about special populations? Is there any differences based on different populations that you would like nurses to be aware of? Men versus women, different ethnicities. And then probably one really interesting one is, what do you do for the cognitively delayed or impaired with heart failure?
Yeah, so I'll start off by differences in men and women. So when it comes to heart failure, In women, you'll see more HFpEF, so a preserved ejection fraction, and they tend to be older in age. But if you see a younger female with heart failure, then they tend to have HFrEF, so reduced ejection fraction. Men in general tend to have more reduced ejection fraction. There's more heart disease in men, meaning heart attack or MI, especially at a younger age. When we go into ethnicities, so in African American population, there's going to be a lot of heart disease, stroke, a lot of hypertension. So you'll see a lot of hypertensive induced cardiomyopathies in that group. Same thing in the Hispanic community as well. As far as in the cognitive delay individuals, that's tough. So that's going to take someone that's really paying close attention to just changes in their normal daily habits. Changes in diet, sleep, weight, behavior. Somebody that's paying very close attention to them that hopefully knows them well from baseline, that can be tough.
One of the things that we like to talk about as nurses is making sure that we avoid the danger of making assumptions with our cognitively impaired patients. A lot of times we'll just say, oh, this is just due to their cognitive status, but cognitive status says a lot, right, about what's going on in the body, agitation versus being fatigued. In addition to those more objective signs and symptoms that you mentioned earlier.
I think that's a good synopsis. So anything really out of their baseline and trying to put it all together, and just knowing that all of those can be warning signs of underlying heart issues.
Right. Well, thank you for all of this so far. I'm going to ask one last question, and that is there anything additional that you want to tell your nursing audience about how we can make sure that we're looking out for the patients and making your job in treating them easier?
So what I will say is, as a physician, we value what the nurses have to say immensely. The nurses spend more time generally with the patients than what we do. So the nurses notice if there's a change from baseline. I can look at a patient's labs and see if there's end organ dysfunction, or I can go based on what I'm told. But especially if you're at a facility and you've worked with nurses long enough, you build quite a rapport with them. You learn to trust them. And I'm speaking for myself, when a nurse calls me and says, I'm worried about patient in room so and so, can you come and take a look? I tend to stop what I'm doing and go and take a look, because if they're going to go out of their way to stop what they're doing to call me up and tell me what's going on, 9 times out of 10, something's going on. So don't be afraid to speak up. What you say matters. We appreciate what you do. We appreciate the input that you give. You make our job much better. You make the patients' lives much better. And if there's anything that we can do to help you out, just ask. I love it when a nurse stops me and asks me, well, why are you doing this? I love to take the time to sit and explain it to them. So just keep doing what you're doing. We can't do what we do without you.
Thank you for that. And just a piece of advice. I've been a nurse for almost 30 years, which is really frightening that it's been that long. But I will say this about reporting to physicians for any of the nurses listening, but most especially for the novice nurses. Make sure that you listen and re-listen to the symptomology that we went over today and bring your observations, your vital signs, and those symptom changes and status changes with you to the call to the physician, because it really does help in deciding, the criticality, what needs to happen immediately versus, what can wait, and really provides a better picture. So that is my last piece of advice for our listeners, especially given some of the non-common ones that you went over today. That would really help, I'm sure. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Chrissy Dunbar. We really appreciate your time. I think there's probably 101 other questions we could ask you, diving a little bit deeper into different situations. But I think for today, just getting this general overview and really diving into that has been immensely helpful. So thank you so much for your expertise today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And if I can ever be of any help, just ask.
You may end up answering us sooner than you think. But we really appreciate that. And to all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in and hearing more about heart failure and its symptoms, etiology, and progression. We really appreciate your time here at RN Huddle, and we definitely invite you back for our next episode. So thank you and take care.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.